the holidays are here.
It has been such a crazy year.
I see some stockings behind you.
Yes, I have been decorating, you know, getting ready for the holidays. I've got this little guy out.
It's a, since of course you're listening to a podcast, because this is the BC's Creepy Podcast.
Yes, welcome back.
Welcome back. We are doing another episode, as you know. Topher was holding up a pillow with a skull, with a Santa hat and a beard on it.
It's None of beautiful. You can see that. It's a treasure. I might put it up on Instagram later.
Ooh. Yes, anyways, I am Ariel Hansen.
And I'm Topher Graham, and this is BC's Creepy.
As has been said. And, yeah, so we were just talking about the holidays. It is now December while we're recording this, and things about to get holly jolly up in this bitch, because today Colin and I are going to get our Christmas tree.
Excellent. I have gotten myself a little, like, 1 foot tall Christmas tree.
That's perfect.
I know. It's completely decorated in bad cookie ornaments.
Aww.
Yeah, I am quite pleased with it.
Nice.
So we have got a very special episode for you guys today.
I mean, is it specialer than our normal episodes?
It's our hometown episode.
I suppose so. I mean, it doesn't really count for me because so many of the topics have been from my hometown.
Yes, but for me, it's special. And I'll give you guys a little bit of background, just a tiny bit. I was meant to go home and visit family since I actually returned to Canada from London.
Yes, Topher is back in the motherland.
But due to current BC restrictions, me and Ariel are in different households doing the responsible thing.
Yeah, ain't worth getting sick just to record a podcast.
Yeah, that's the other thing that stopped me from going home was the restrictions. So I did a research episode for Edmonton, and I'll tell you all about this topic when it's my turn.
Yes, because I'm going first today.
Yeah.
I also have a much later topic. Although, doing the research, it does get a little bit dark.
Excellent.
Yeah, which I was not expecting. Yeah. So I guess, should we just jump right into it?
Let's jump right in. What's your topic, Ariel?
Okay, my topic is the haunting of the Rogers Chocolate Shop in downtown Victoria on Government Street.
I love chocolate.
Yeah, well, I figured it was also a very appropriate topic for the holidays because growing up, my Nana used to always get us Rogers Chocolates for Christmas. And Rogers Chocolates, it's like, it's good quality chocolate. It's not waxy, cheap tasting stuff. Especially since as I got a little bit older, I got really picky about my chocolate. So I only eat dark chocolate and luckily,
fancy type for royals.
Not necessarily. I just, I need the extra flavor. You know, milk chocolate just has this like blandness to it, whereas dark chocolate has this oomph chocolate.
So milk chocolate's just like sugar.
Basically. And so my Nana would get me a advent calendar from Rogers Chocolate because you could get a dark chocolate advent calendar instead of milk chocolate. So that sort of became a bit of a family tradition for quite a while. And so, yeah, just thinking about Rogers Chocolates, it makes me think about the holidays and Christmas. And so I thought this topic was an appropriate one.
Sure sounds appropriate. Sure sounds like the holidays. It's getting me all pumped up.
Pumped up. So, Charles Candy Rogers moved to Victoria, BC in 1885, and he was 31 years old when he made the big move. Why do I say it was a big move? Because he was originally born in Massachusetts in the U.S., and he was born to a farming family, so he was a farmer on the opposite side of the continent until he decided to make the journey west, and west to a new country, even.
Before the invention of planes.
Yes. Or they might have been starting to understand planes, but there was no commercial passenger flights, that's for sure. So when he moved to Victoria, he started a greengrocer, which, if you don't know what that is, it is a store that basically sells fruits and vegetables.
Useful. Practical.
Yeah. And like, especially if he grew up in a farming family, that kind of makes sense. He knows his fruits and vegetables, you know?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the only thing he carried.
Ooh.
He also carried imported chocolates from San Francisco.
Oh, man. The Bay Area, where all the hipsters live.
I don't know if it's hipsters. It's more like a Silicon Valley tycoons.
Silicon Valley hipsters. My grandma used to live in San Francisco. She was a full-on hippie.
I've actually got a friend who is from San Francisco. So I've heard many a thing about the city, and should we ever go there, can say hi to our mom.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. After being in Victoria for a little while, he met a young woman named Leah Morrison. And she was 21 at the time, so a bit of an age difference, but at least she was an adult.
Yep. At least.
Yeah, because they got married. So she was an adult, so way less creepy than it could have been.
Especially back in those days.
Yes. Yes. And after they got married, then eventually in 1890, they welcomed their only child into the family, Freddie Rogers.
Fred Rogers. It sounds like a movie star.
Yeah, well, I know there's Ginger Rogers, I want to say, is a famous person. I think she was like a dancer or something like that, with like Fred Astaire kind of thing. I could be getting that completely wrong, though. Don't quote me. I've listened to a lot of You Must Remember This, but clearly not that much.
There's now, a lot of time for podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I already listened to podcasts constantly anyways, so I think that hasn't changed. I normally work nights, so I usually have the whole day to be like, I listen while I work around the house or work out or go to da-da-da, run an errands. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, back to the chocolate. These imported chocolates were so popular at the store that they would sell out just like that, like really quickly, and they couldn't keep them in stock. So eventually, Charles and Lee, they decided to cut out the middleman and make their own chocolate.
More profit.
Yeah. So one of the early techniques that they actually would use to make their chocolate, they had a bit of a problem at the greengrocer with the fruits, because the soft fruits would often go off bad, yeah, pretty fast compared to the vegetables. So what they would do is when the fruits were overripe, but they weren't bad, but they weren't exactly sellable, they would take the fruit, dip it in sugar, and then dip it in chocolate and sell those. Mm. Yeah. Okay. And they would like open their shop, and within 45 minutes to an hour, everything would be sold out chocolate wise.
So it's like, you don't even need the, if you're like, oh, I'm not going to sell this fruit, dip it in chocolate, people are going to buy it.
Yep. Yep.
Magic.
It's also reducing food waste. which is good. Now, eventually they did move on to more complex forms of chocolate making, although you can still to this day get chocolate-covered blueberries, chocolate-covered cherries, all those kinds of things from Rogers Chocolate. I want it all. They use dried fruits. And you can get chocolate-covered candied ginger, all sorts of good stuff. And that's not what they're most famous for, though. Eventually, Charles invented their most famous chocolate, the Victoria Cream.
Ooh. It sounds fancy. Super bougie. Top of the top.
I'm sure it is. It's fancy, but it's not like out of the reach of everyone price-wise. Because it's like a bit of a disc puck shape. So it's got like this cream inside and it's chocolate covered. I've probably had them growing up. I don't quite remember them because I usually was just given solid chocolates. Because I also can be very picky about what's inside the chocolate. Don't you dare give me like a chocolate covered maraschino cherry.
Okay. Notes for Christmas.
Too much sweetness. I don't want things that are too sugary, you know?
I hate cherries and I hate milk chocolate and it's all the worst.
There's a difference. Dark chocolate covered dried cherry, that's good. Milk chocolate covered maraschino cherry, get that garbage out of here.
See, I'm gonna go get some like white chocolate covered M&Ms.
Why would you cover an M&M that is already chocolate coated in candy in more chocolate?
Well, you just answered your question. More chocolate.
You're making my nose run.
All right, I'll settle down.
Well, because they started making their own chocolates, the Rogers became Canada's first chocolatiers.
Yes! Go Canada!
Go BC! Go Victoria! You know, just
West Coast represent. We're creepy and we love chocolate.
Yeah. Charles would run the business sides of things and do a lot of the candy cooking, while Leah would handle the storefront. Like, Charles would do some of the innovation with the chocolate. They would both work together to make the chocolates at the beginning and end of the day. But, like, all the money side of things, that was Charles. And the beautiful storefront and customer service was Leah.
You know, divide and conquer.
Exactly.
Best way to do it.
Work on your strengths, you know. Sadly, though, as much as they worked well together, that didn't leave a lot of time for parenting.
Oh.
Yeah. So Freddie went through nurses and governesses growing up like wildfire because he was desperate to get attention from his parents, and that led to him acting out.
Makes sense.
And as he got older, that acting out got even worse, with one of his favorite activities being blowing things up.
Oh, no.
Because back in the 1800s, you could send your kid to the hardware store to get all sorts of things, you know, you need on your farm, stuff like that, like dynamite.
More than just fireworks.
Yeah, no, this kid would be buying dynamite, like literal explosives, cutting them into smaller pieces. So it's not quite as big of a bang, but still enough to, I'll explain how this goes.
Oh, you know, this is already a rough setup.
Yeah. So he really liked to take his little mini dynamites with him onto the streetcars.
Oh, no.
And so he'd get to the front of the streetcar, he'd light his little stick of dynamite, throw it right out beside the streetcar. It would explode, freak everyone out, and then he'd run off down a side, run off the streetcar and down a side street before anyone could catch him. And it got so bad that the government actually had to pass a law that anyone named Frederick Rogers wasn't allowed to take public transportation in Victoria.
Oh, that is more than banned.
Yeah, that is anyone who shares your name. Like, very luckily, my grandfather's last name was Tanner and not Rogers because he was a Frederick.
Yeah.
Now, this hobby of his, it finally caught up with him when he was 14. He pushed his luck just too far. And after he mistimed one of his little explosions, he managed to maim his right hand.
Oh, no.
And it also got him in the eye, so his sight from his right eye was affected, and it also got his ear, so his hearing in his right side was affected as well. And there's even people who believe that this caused some brain damage.
It would. I mean, probably.
Yeah, so he's now a 14-year-old with, like, this deformed hand that some people were describing it as, like, lobster claw shaped.
That's
like a lot for a 14-year-old to deal with. And in 1905, when he was 15 years old, at the New England Hotel, Freddie took his own life.
Oh.
Yeah. I told you this was taking a dark turn that was not expected.
No.
The loss of their son really hit Charles and Leah hard, and it made them actually just bury themselves in their work. After his death, they almost never went to their home. They slept at the chocolate shop in the kitchen, and they pulled away from the rest of the community. Like, they would rarely leave their shop at all. So that was a big loss for them. In 1927, Charles passed away. And Leah couldn't handle the business on her own. So
she actually
wound up selling it. Yeah, they were a team.
Yeah.
And like, if you're used to giving it your all already, then having the other half of your team just disappear.
Yeah.
Like, as much as people say, you know, give it 200% or whatever, that
no,
you can't. If you're already giving 100%, that's as much as you can give. So yes, she sold the business. She had also been left an estate by her husband, which in today's money was over $1 million.
Loaded. Nice.
Loaded, but she...
Unhappy.
She was very unhappy. She actually ended up just over time giving away all of her money to charities and to her church. And when she passed away, there wasn't even enough money for a headstone for her. She was so impoverished from giving away all of her money.
Well, she's actually my hero. This is what it's all led to. She's my hero.
Well, now let's talk about the haunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that we've got the history out of the way. Well, not out of the way. It is actually very fascinating.
I'm enthralled.
We are here for haunting. First, I'd like to talk about the building where these hauntings occur, which was their chocolate shop, which was not the original greengrocer. It was actually built in 1903 across the street from the greengrocer.
Nice.
This is located on Government Street, which is, I would say, in downtown Victoria, probably like the most picturesque of the streets, especially the section that it's in. It like leads down towards the harbor, and if you keep going along it, you'll eventually get to the legislature, not the parliament buildings, legislature.
Yeah.
Everyone calls it the parliament buildings, but the parliament buildings are in Ottawa, because that's federal.
Yeah.
This is provincial.
This is provincial.
It's a legislature.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just had to get that rant out there. So many people get it wrong.
And of course, this is in Victoria, which everybody who's listened to the show before knows is the most haunted city in Canada.
Yes, exactly. So, the building that was built in 1903 had a storefront in what was called a Queen Anne revival style, which I also learned that Queen Anne was a queen in England, like, that ruled on her own. There's actually been more, like, female rulers in England's history than I realized. I always kind of thought it was, like, Queen Elizabeth
First and second and Victoria.
And also Queen Elizabeth's older sister. And like, Queen Elizabeth I's older sister.
Mary, Queen of Scots.
Yeah, but then there was also Queen Anne.
I have not heard of Queen Anne before.
Yeah, she didn't have a super long reign. It was, I believe, in the 1700s. Based on the painting I saw of her, it looked very, very 18th century. So she clearly, as with Victorian era, Edwardian era, Georgian era, she had her own style that got established, and that had a bit of a revival in the Edwardian era. So confusing. Just all these names.
I think we should revive it again.
I mean, why not? Edwardians, I mean, I watch a lot of Costume and Victorian and Edwardian styles, you know, they come back around.
It's going to be the Charles era soon, so.
I guess so. The second Elizabethan era has lasted the longest ever.
Ever. I mean, good for her. She's still kicking.
Yeah, yeah. Back onto this building that we've been so distracted from.
Which will get us back to the chocolate.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So it was designed by local architect Thomas Hooper, who apparently also designed a lot of other buildings that eventually became haunted in Victoria. The front was built with stained glass pieces in the windows, as well as intricate tiling and luxurious wooden features.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so very, like, if you picture Charles Dickens movies, like, think of...
I can picture any, it.
Yeah, any adaptation of A Christmas Carol and just, like, that old Victorian... Like, I'm saying Victorian, even though it's technically a revival of a previous period, but it's like kind of all gets mashed together if the revival's happening.
Especially here in Canada.
Yeah.
In Victoria.
The building was built. They sold their chocolates in there. They slept in there. They worked in there. And after Charles passed away, strange things started to happen.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's hard to leave your job, even if you die.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you like your job, if you hate your job, I think you'd rather haunt somewhere else.
Yeah, it'd be pretty awful if you're like at McDonald's washing dishes and
eternally.
You died. Yeah, just keep what. Yeah, but a fancy chocolate shop first in Canada.
Yeah, and now I've ranted about my hatred for milk chocolate. I'm not the only one. Charles also hated milk chocolate.
All right. You guys can gang up on me.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah, it's me and a ghost versus you on your lonesome.
Just more milk chocolate for me, is all.
Well, not necessarily. You see, Rogers introduced milk chocolate after Charles' death.
Sacrilege.
So, I know. So up until Charles died, Rogers chocolate was just dark chocolate. Yes.
Yeah.
And he was not happy with this change that they took after his passing. In fact, he would take the milk chocolate, leave trails of them on the floor to like get them out of the displays, get them out of there. And he would even sometimes try to sabotage the making of the milk chocolate. He just hated it that much. I really appreciate this about him.
I love that this is a ghost doing this.
Yeah. And things got so bad that the manager of the shop actually wound up like speaking to the ether to inside the shop to beg him to stop sabotaging the milk chocolate because it was hurting the business. So,
all right.
Yeah. So
reasonable.
After that, he was like, okay. So he stopped fucking with the milk chocolate. That doesn't mean he went away, though. He would also tie people's shoelaces together if they stood still for too long. So he was clearly a time to lean, time to clean kind of boss.
Oh, no.
Yep. And he would throw change around in the office upstairs when no one was up there, as well as like opening and closing cupboards, stomping around and messing with the electrics. So like lights would turn on and off and flicker. The radio would just turn on when no one was in the room.
And I know I'm dead, but I'm still the boss, damn it.
Exactly. Exactly. And now Leah actually lived for another 25 years after Charles passing. And after Leah passed, the hauntings increased.
Nice.
So
she got her old job back.
I mean, basically, because before Leah passed away, the hauntings primarily were more so in the kitchen in the back, in the business upstairs. Leah passes away, and now the storefront's being affected too.
Was it like, well, go on, tell me.
Yeah. So staff would frequently find the displays that they put up rearranged, or like say they'd done a line of chocolates a little sloppily, they'd turn, like they'd leave the room and come back, and all of the chocolates would be in these perfectly neat lines. So she's a bit gentler of a spirit. I mean, also the staff would also find like spoons and ladles in places too high to reach. So there was still some mischievous stuff going on, but her hauntings were not quite as destructive as sabotaging the milk chocolate.
Well, she is the face of the company.
Yes. And the company actually, after her death and this increase in hauntings, remember she had died so impoverished that there was no place marker on her grave. And hoping that it would calm down the hauntings, Rogers Chocolates actually bought her a headstone and placed that over her grave to see if that would help. It didn't. The haunting still kept up.
I mean, her home is nicer, but you know, you still gotta work.
Yeah, and you're still dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've covered, you know, the storefront, the back of house, as you might call it, and all the strange happenings. There is one more aspect of the haunting that we need to talk about, because there's one more strange occurrence. So one year around Christmas time, which is of course the busiest time of year at Rogers Chocolates, everybody wants that chocolate for Christmas.
Of course.
Everyone in Victoria wants to put a Victoria cream in the toe of their children's stocking.
The height of luxury.
Exactly. Decadence. Opulence. That is what Christmas is about.
Suck it, Whoville.
Mm-hmm. So the staff kept finding a handprint on this mirror that is above the doorway when people enter the store. So that's like easily 8 feet tall, not easy for someone to reach. And
unless they're like already 7 feet tall and jumping.
Yep, exactly. And so the staff would like clean it up. And then they'd come in the next day. And it would be there again. And they all started to get kind of pissed off at each other, thinking that someone was doing it. So they actually, like, the manager was like, okay, we are going to have everyone put their hand beside the handprint to see if it's the same size. So the staff set up a ladder, and then they each walked up to the top of the ladder, put their hand beside it. None of them matched. And on closer inspection, they realized that the hand, it was a deformed shape.
Oh, that's the, oh. Yeah.
So it appears that the ghost of Freddy may have joined his parents in the shop in the afterlife.
He's still pissed about not getting enough attention.
And that is the haunting of Rogers Chocolates.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, and they also, of course, over the years, ended up expanding the company to have multiple locations. As we both discovered recently, the Gastown location in Vancouver closed.
It's heartbreaking.
Probably because of COVID.
Yeah, we've had a tough go.
Yeah, apparently they're still open on Granville Island, though, and they've got multiple locations on the island, Vancouver Island, including the Heritage Shop in downtown Victoria, which is still open to this day, and is also well known for its Christmas window displays. So if you're in Victoria, and you can do so safely, wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart, go check out Rogers Chocolates.
Wonderful.
And this podcast was not sponsored.
No, but clearly we love chocolate.
Yeah, and hey, Rogers Chocolates, you hear this? You want to send us some chocolate? Please do. Send us an email. We will send you our addresses. Now, my sources for this episode, the biggest source was a book that I believe we have used on this podcast before, Victoria's Most Haunted by Ian Gibbs.
One from your mom?
Yep, from the Royal BC Museum gift shop, which you can also shop from online now.
Nice.
For that COVID safety. Also, I got some information from the Rogers Chocolate website, bcmag.ca. VancouverIslandView.com, TravelinBC.com, and ClipperVacations.com. Lots of tourist sites want to tell you about the haunting of Rogers Chocolates, but none of them had as much information as Mr. Ian Gibbs.
Of course.
Yes.
They didn't want to scare people away, but Ian Gibbs, he's all for it.
I mean, if you're getting people to be like, ooh, the place is haunted, the more spooky details you include, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to turn a page here and get away from the happy holidays.
Oh, no.
And I am going to tell you guys about the most infamous killer in Edmonton.
In Edmonton? Yeah. So, now, Is this the killer in that haunted hotel that we visited?
No.
Oh.
I never did find out who...
If that was even true?
Yeah. I mean, everything I could find about it was just like, you should go on this ghost tour. We'll tell you about this Duke. So, you know. But it was still a pretty spooky hotel. I'm pretty sure it's haunted. Yeah. It's old enough.
Actually, just the other day, I was location scouting for an upcoming film and got to go to Riverview.
I was just watching a show where they talked about filming Elf in Riverview.
They filmed Elf in Riverview? Was it the apartment set?
So this was like the mail room. This would have been like the prison. This was like a lot of the spooky places and a lot of the indoor locations.
That's hilarious.
They also filmed at the P&E, which is like literally, I don't know, 5 minutes from me.
Anyways, I was just going to say that some of the rooms in Riverview that haven't been maintained had a very similar vibe to that hotel, except cleaner. Like, Riverview definitely felt cleaner than that hotel.
Yeah. I could believe that. But they're renovating.
Yeah.
Regardless. Mark Twitchell.
Was he a streamer?
Well, he was a filmmaker, like you and me.
I'm not going to lie. I actually do know who he is.
Yeah. We know this.
Yeah.
We both listened to the last podcast on the left. And, of course, this was actually like, this was really famous when I was in high school, actually, learning film.
Oof.
Go figure. So Mark Twitchell was born July 4th in 1979. He was an aspiring filmmaker taking the radio and television program at NAIT, or the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology. Fun fact, NAIT was like probably a 20-minute walk from my house and a 5-minute walk from my school. So I know it very well. And I know this neighborhood very well.
Is it? When we went to Edmonton, we also drove past the art school my mom went to. Not the same school, right?
Did
they eventually merge or something?
This would have been like a post-secondary one.
Yeah, my mom went to post-secondary in Edmonton.
It might have been.
It was like something MacArthur or something like that.
I don't know.
Anyways.
He got a bit of a small fan base because he started this project, a Star Wars fan film called Secrets of the Rebellion. And this was...
That's what we need. More Star Wars movies.
Yeah. This one had a small cameo from Jeremy Bullock, who played Boba Fett. It was filmed entirely on green screen.
Oh.
And he was out of money, and so he never actually... He was looking for somebody to animate the backgrounds without...
Why would you do it all on green screen?
It's Star Wars. But, like, you need to be able to spend the money. Like, the amount of money you're spending on production, at least that.
Yeah. Okay. So, this actually reminds me. There is a Vancouver-produced Star Wars fan film called Bucketheads... They didn't film in front of green screen. They used the natural environment of the area and made it work for the story.
Yeah, well, that's what a smart person does.
Yeah.
Mark Twitchell was not a smart person. Mark Twitchell.
I think we can all agree on that.
Mark Twitchell thought he was so great and this idea was so great that he could convince a volunteer to do all this for free. And I know a lot of our listeners are Vancouver film people, and you know that animating any length of film, I don't know.
Any visual effects,
not something you do for free.
Yeah. Like,
I know. And this is just the start.
And was this a shorter feature?
You know, I didn't actually, it was never released, never finished. So I couldn't tell you a runtime.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like, okay, if it's a short, oh God, if it's a feature, there's no way you're going to get, oh my God, that's like a year of someone's life.
Jeremy Bullock was going to play, I think Han Solo, and he was offered like final cut of the film. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. But I mean, this is, as we get into this, you're going to figure out that like Mark Twitchell is like a huge grifter, a huge grifter. So at the time of his arrest, he had also been developing a comedy feature called Day Players. He had like this one little like teaser trailer completed. He was getting people to invest in it. He convinced one of his, I think it was his uncle, family, to actually invest like $30,000. And but all in all, he was looking for about $3.5 million for this feature he written, which was
$3.5 million.
Yeah, it is
for basically our first feature.
Yeah, and it was just
in Alberta.
He talks about it in his like interrogation. He says like, oh, you know, because we're filming in Alberta, lots of Albertan companies will want to spend on that actual, like, local talent. And I'm saying local talent with air quotes that you can't see because it's a podcast. But, he had the, and I've seen the teaser. It's available on YouTube. I mean, I don't recommend it. Yeah, he'd written this thing. He raised about 90,000.
Just make a smaller scale script. Make your film with that.
That's what smart people do. And again, Mark Twitchell, who is not a smart person.
No.
In fact, several accounts will paint Mark as a compulsive liar. So he's always embellishing credits to further his career, telling people, I got this and this and this, so that when you come on, you know, you come on thinking, oh, there's actually a lot of potential.
Oh, God, is he one of those people who, like, on their IMDb page, they say they made a short film, and they make sure, like, they credit themselves on IMDb for every single department, so they've only got one film on there, but they got 10 credits?
One thing I heard was that he was going around telling people, oh, Jeff Goldblum is attached to this film. And
what?
Like, it's just,
that's not a lie you can get away with.
I mean, I guess he was a big proponent of fake it until you make it.
There's fake it until you make it. And then there's bald face, lie your hair and ass off.
Well, he lied. He had not just in his career, but his he would have affairs. He lost his job and kept it from his second wife.
Oh God, second wife! So he had two women he convinced to marry him.
Yeah, well, his first wife was a woman he met online from abroad. This is like the early days of internet. So you got to think like Nexopia. Facebook was like, Mark is blah, 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 blah.
Oh my God, I remember those statuses.
Yeah. And of course we didn't know about like catfishing. We didn't know about, well, people were just a bit more optimistic. You know, the internet was the future. We're bringing the world together.
Nobody lies on the internet. Everything on the internet's true.
Yeah, you can do so much research about, you know, COVID and vaccinations and the president of the United States.
So many things you can learn about on the internet. from any source. They're all true.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So this is a... this is an anecdote that we got from the first wife after she had moved to Edmonton from the States and basically got married
when you said she was from abroad, I was picturing like a country that people try to leave by marrying someone else.
Yeah, no, this is like the U.S.
Okay.
She moved to Edmonton to be with him. They got married really fast, and one night in bed after like being married, I don't know, maybe a week or so, he drops the question, have you ever thought about killing someone?
Now that isn't just a red flag, that's like a red bed sheet, like, just wrapping around you.
Just, like, flags the size of...
your house.
Yeah. Just...
that is
just
a flag that you can see from space.
But this was the early days of everything, you know? And, you know, he is admittingly very good at talking and very charming.
The other thing, it's his first wife, so she clearly got out of there somehow.
Yeah.
Hopefully not by being murdered.
Yeah. So now we're going to get to...
Please tell me she wasn't murdered.
She wasn't murdered.
Okay.
Both of his wives are alive and well. We're just about to get to the crimes, the juicy bit.
Oh.
We have to talk about early October 2007.
Spooky season.
When Mark had gotten this terrible, ugly idea.
Oh.
And he started to work on this short film called House of Cards.
And he decided to play a politician scheming his way up the parliamentary system.
No, this was a short film about a man who lures people online to a garage where he attacks them with a stun gun. And he's wearing this mask, a hockey mask cut in half and painted gold and black. And then he murders them in a big violent fashion.
Oh.
And here's your big twist ending, is that it's all a script being written by a writer. But then the writer turns around and says something akin to, well, you gotta write what you know.
That sounds awful. Oh my, it not only is it just boring torture porn, but then it's a double fake out, as you might say.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so as he's making this, he appears to be falling into a deep spiral. Like his marriage, his second marriage, is now falling apart, even though she has a kid. So Mark Twitchell does have a son.
Oh, poor kid.
Yeah, apparently he lost his job, but was keeping it from his wife.
That's never a good plan.
No. So even so far as to like leaving the house 9 to 5.
Oh, God.
You know, and of course, very slow progress in his film career as he's trying to make this feature, not finished his Star Wars piece.
Yeah, like, and you need to have a finished thing that you can show people to be like, I can make a thing and finish it before they're gonna give you money.
Yeah. So House of Cards was like this fetishization of violence and fantasy that was clearly gripping him.
It was his jerk-off film.
Yeah. So he rents the garage from a couple who speaks poor English on the 1st of September 2008. And he's obsessed. He tries going to the States to buy a stun gun. And this is hilarious because he gets turned away at the border because he lies. He's like, I'm going to the States to make a music video.
Oh, no!
And he's trying to buy a stun gun, but he says he's going to make a music video, and they say, well, you're not allowed to work in the States. You don't have a visa. Turn around.
And he should have learned that in film school if they had a business class. You can't get into the States to work without a work visa, especially if you tell them at the border.
But I mean, if he told them, I'm going to go buy a stun gun, they probably would have given less shits. Come on in.
Yeah. The only issue he would have had would have been coming back.
Yeah. So on the last week of end of September, he films his short. And apparently this is not enough. This jerk-off film.
Okay, why would you need a real stun gun for a short film?
Well, clearly he had other plans going through his mind. So he started creating a catfish account on Plenty of Fish and started following his own short film and looking for lonely men to date, thinking that this would be, people that wouldn't be missed.
Oh, God. Just because someone's looking for love doesn't mean that there are people who there aren't anyone who loves them.
Yeah.
Just it might be familial or platonic. Like, oh.
This is.
Just because you're lonely doesn't mean you're alone.
Yeah. So on October 3rd, a man named Giles Tetrault agrees to go to this garage in Edmonton to pick up a woman named Sheena for a date, who has been completely fabricated by Mark to lure this man.
So, I really hope he wasn't using pictures of his wife.
I think they were stock photos, but I couldn't tell you who these people were or where the pictures came from. I assume that he would want to try and create some separation because he was clearly thinking about how to get away with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking the ability to have all pictures of one person in these different situations.
Yeah.
But maybe he just stalked someone's Facebook if that existed by then.
Take somebody else's photos, all of their photos and copy and paste. So he invites Giles to take this strange roundabout way to get to this garage to go on a date. And Giles thought nothing of that, clearly.
Okay, I have a question about this garage. Was it an outbuilding on someone's property? Or is it one of those garages that is attached to the person's house?
So, in Edmonton, our garages were separate buildings and usually facing towards an alleyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense because, growing up in Victoria, we didn't have alleyways, so majority of garages were a part of people's houses. So I'm, picturing that, and I'm just rent that out? That's a part of your house.
I can see this very clearly. This would have been a separate building.
Okay.
The people renting the garage probably lived in the house behind it.
Okay, that all makes more sense then.
Yeah. So Giles goes into the garage and is attacked by Mark wearing his mask with the stun gun. And he goes down, but he doesn't go down easy. There's a violent struggle and Giles actually gets away.
But thank goodness.
He did not report the attack to the police because he was embarrassed.
Aww.
And this is This is a word of caution, people out there. If you're attacked, tell the police. You could be saving the next person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
As long as it is safe for you to contact the police.
Yeah. Because it was never investigated, and Mark himself seemed to feel a sense of security. And a week later, on October 10th, he tried again. His second victim was a man named John Brian Altinger. He was a 38-year-old man who worked as an oil field equipment manager. Pretty good job, pretty stable job. On October 10th, he told his friends that he planned to meet a woman named Jenna that he'd been chatting to on plentyoffish.com. He was telling people because he got these weird instructions. You have to go through this way and that way to get to a garage. It's fishy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nobody thought of anything because this was new to everybody. You know, she looks real. She's talking to you. She's nerdy. She likes Star Wars.
That's the first red flag. No girl likes Star Wars.
Not in 2007.
Yeah, it's not like I had Star Wars action figures in my bedroom.
Yeah. So Johnny shows up to the garage a half hour early, and Mark Twitchell is not ready. He's surprised. And of course, Johnny is surprised to see Mark. But
what's the dude doing here?
But Mark, being an incredible improviser and writer, genius writer, says that, oh, he is a friend of Jenna's.
And
this garage is set up like this because I'm filming a music video.
Oh, that's all fine then.
Yeah. And he even though Johnny was a little nervous, Mark took a pretend phone call from Jenny and told Johnny that she was stuck in traffic and would be a half an hour late. And if you want to wait, whatever, but she's going to be a while. And so Johnny goes home. You know, awkward.
That should just be the end of the story, right? That's how it ends?
No. Because he gets home and, as you would do, sends a message to Jenny. So, you know, what's up? What happened? And Jenny says, well, you know, I was stuck in traffic, but I'm home now if you want to swing by. So Johnny came back to the garage.
Also, wouldn't he find it weird that she would say she was home, but she wanted him to meet her at the garage, which she clearly didn't live in because it was set up to shoot a music video?
Oh, I was just paraphrasing.
Oh, okay.
But she told him to come back, and he came back. And, of course, he's going to see Mark back in the garage. And according to Mark, not a reliable witness.
Nope.
His final words were, I guess I'm just a glutton for punishment. I wish I could stop the story there.
Oh, no.
Because this next part is really rough.
Oh, no.
So Mark threw away the stun gun. That's not useful. And decided instead to just beat on Johnny with a pipe. And there was a struggle, there was a fight, until he finally pulls the knife and stabs him in the throat. And so this is how he died.
Oh, God.
But Mark had to get rid of the body, so he dismembered it and disposed of the body using a car, which left bloodstains that would be put into evidence. And he tried to burn the pieces of the body, but that didn't work. So he ended up leaving the remains in a sewer. And That was really sad. After this, Mark goes into Johnny's email and sits to throw people off the scent. He sends emails to all of Johnny's friends. And the email goes like this. And you tell me if this is suspicious, if you got this from me, Ariel. Hey there. I've met an extraordinary woman named Jen, who has offered to take me on a nice long tropical vacation. We'll be staying in her winter home in Costa Rica. Phone number to follow soon. I won't be back in town until December 10th, but I will be checking my email periodically. See you around the holidays, Johnny.
I mean, okay, so if it's coming from you, I wouldn't be as suspicious as if it were, say, coming from one of our other friends. Just because you...
I run away. I'm very impulsive. But you would follow up with me. And I would
follow up, but the thing that I would find suspicious is that you'd met someone who owned a winter home anywhere. Who owned a home at all.
Yeah.
I'd be like, did you find, like, some 60-year-old woman? Like, what is this?
Woo them with my ridiculously good looks.
Are you someone's boy toy now? Like,
I mean, if the margarita fits.
Hear that, independently wealthy older women? Topher is down to clown.
So, of course, this is all very suspicious, and Johnny's friends told this to the police. And at first, the police didn't take it seriously at all. They were like, well, maybe he went. You know, maybe it's fine. Whatever.
Wow.
But then his friends broke into Johnny's condo and saw that all of his belongings, including his passport, kind of need that to go to Costa Rica.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little suspicious, you know.
And Johnny was nowhere to be found, but his car was missing. Because Mark tried to take it and tell people that he bought it off a stranger for $40.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay. This guy needs to tell more realistic lies.
Yeah. You know, like 100%.
Like.
I mean, you can tell him.
No thanks. I don't really ever want to talk to this person. You know, yeah. I'd like to keep murderous liars out of my life.
Out of your bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So in the meantime, this is October, Halloween. Mark is reeling in his fantasy world. He's authored a document titled SK Confessions that basically detailed the events of the murder. And it starts with the words, "This story is based on true events. The names and events were altered slightly to protect the guilty. This is the story of my progression into becoming a serial killer."
But if... Why the title itself, stupid. Why, you're going to abbreviate serial killer, but you're not going to abbreviate confessions? So the word confessions in it, that's really fucking suspicious if someone looks over your shoulder. Why not call it SKC?
Yeah, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been found.
Yeah.
And logged into evidence. He also took to Facebook to tell an online friend that he may have crossed the line and liked it.
Oh.
And this is the point of the story where I can tell everybody out there why Mark Twitchell, who killed only one person, is Edmonton's most notorious killer. And I didn't want to bring this up beforehand because I think you guys need to know what kind of person we're dealing with before I go into the fact that he is obsessed with the television show Dexter.
Oh, and here I thought you were going to say Parks and Rec.
He's obsessed with Parks and Rec. And he's always wanted to make a short film about Parks and Rec, and it's such a violent show that...
Yeah. He just wants to make sure that those permits are followed to the letter.
Yeah. Tom Haverford. You know, the next great serial killer.
Municipal politics or die.
Yeah. So Mark was very publicly infatuated with the show Dexter. And for those of you who haven't watched Dexter,
like me,
like Ariel, Dexter is a show about a serial killer who is trained by his father to kill other serial killers. And it was very popular because, well, you get a sense of justice and you're and they've got these beautifully shot, murder scenes. It was very influential.
It's just creepy that his dad would train him to kill.
His dad was a police officer. And
that's even worse. Police officers are training their children to be murderers?
To kill the serial killers that got away. It was a very, I enjoyed the show. I made a little Dexter film with the kill room. I'm not above.
Topher, do we need to have a talk?
This was years ago. I was in highest, regardless. I did not murder anybody.
We just do it in our films.
Yeah. So Mark Twitchell even created a fake Facebook profile as the lead character, Dexter Morgan.
Oh, that's so dumb.
So when he was saying that he may have crossed the line and liked it, he was talking as Dexter Morgan friend.
A little easier to get away with then.
Yeah.
Because then it's role-playing. I thought that you were meaning from his personal account, and it's
Well, from his personal account, he posted about, I think I'm a little too much like Dexter. I think he wanted to get caught. I don't know. Maybe this is all very...
Maybe he thought he'd get a movie deal out of it.
You know, well, he became Edmonton's most notorious killer.
Yeah.
So he was just marking his story so that we would read it.
Clearly, what he latched on to about Dexter wasn't what you would think. There was no investigation of anyone doing anything wrong. He just wanted to kill someone.
Yeah. And, the media latched onto the story like flies to poo. they were like, oh, this glorification of violence on TV, it's turning people into murderers. There's copycats. We can't have this. What about our children? What about this? But I specifically kept this part of the story out because this was not a normal person. This was a person who, by all accounts, lied to everybody around him, by all accounts, had fantasies of murder before Dexter was out. And worst of all, he had a vanity plate on his car that said Dark Jedi.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that just be a Sith?
You'd think.
Oh, my God. Media doesn't make people murderers. Traces of lead make people murderers.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, trauma, past trauma, or hatred of women, or hatred of people in general, or just, at the end of the day, it was his own personal choice to murder somebody. And we all have this choice. And TV is not telling us or making this choice for us.
Yeah, so everyone, at the end of the day, when you go to bed, most of you, hopefully everyone who listens to this podcast, you can just, you know, give yourself a little pat on the back because today you didn't choose to murder someone.
Yeah. For the record, our position on this is that you should not murder people.
No, please don't. If you want to be on our podcast as like some creepy BC thing, just find a UFO or fake a Sasquatch sighting or find Sasquatch.
Yeah.
You know, let's keep it safe, keep it consensual, keep it cryptid.
Yeah. So Mark was interrogated on the 19th of October, and you can watch this on YouTube. He was arrested on Halloween, October 31st. He tried to fight the charges with all sorts of crazy lies, like he was going to plead guilty to messing with the body, but not to the murder.
What?
He was saying...
Then who murdered him?
Oh, it was self-defense, and... You know, he attacked me, and I had to kill him, but
don't have defensive wounds!
In the story, it's different, because I'm a filmmaker, and I just wanted to turn my tragedy into something productive, and, like, yeah. They didn't believe him, because he detailed everything on his computer, tried to delete it, but they found it. But he was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison with no parole eligibility for 25 years.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the maximum sentence you can get in Canada.
Yep. Yeah. And just because you're eligible for parole doesn't mean you automatically get it.
Oh, he probably won't.
Yeah. Like, I can see the family of... It was Johnny, right?
Yeah.
But I can see Johnny's family being like, at every single parole hearing, no, we are going to give our victim impact statements again.
Well, just being the most notorious killer in Edmonton, the community will rally against him being freed. And especially Edmonton is very hardline when it comes to criminal justice.
Mm.
But in May 2013... it was reported that Twitchell had purchased a television for his prison cell, and he stated that he got to catch up on every Dexter episode that he missed since his arrest. I mean, feel about that how you will. It's complicated. I don't want him to get to watch Dexter, but...
I mean, did the series end well? If there was a downturn...
Okay, so you know, the last season... That is your final punishment, Mark Twitchell. You get to see Dexter with a beard. And oh, God, what a terrible, terrible season that was. For all the rest of us, there's a new season coming sometime next year. But
I mean, now there's a part of me that just wants that new season to be awful so that he'll watch it and just be punished even more.
And I kind of want to watch a good season of Dexter.
There's so many other shows you can watch instead, though.
I know, Hannibal.
Yeah, I was just going to say, watch Hannibal instead. Hannibal it is so is... artistically beautiful in how it's shot and production designed, and it's like eye candy.
Everything about Hannibal is great and beautiful, and it never went downhill.
Yeah, that's one thing about things getting canceled too soon. At least you die a hero or you become the villain. And
speaking of becoming the villain, I've got like one little more tidbit.
Oh.
This is from CBC in 2017. Apparently Mark Twitchell is using a dating site for inmates. And he wrote on Canadian Inmate Connect, "I'm looking for an interesting, intelligent, open-minded..." Yeah. Open-minded could mean so many things here.
I mean, first off, if you're open to dating an inmate, yeah, that's kind of a given that you're open-minded.
Yeah. Delightfully imperfect women who relate to and share amusing observations with.
Oh, as God, well, does he want a manic pixie dream girl?
Of course he does. He lives in a fantasy world. As well as potentially a long weekend every few months if it gets there naturally.
Oh.
He's also determined to get the footage to complete his films, like the Star Wars one, once he's out of prison. Air quotes again.
Yeah, dude, you shot it on a green screen, and you shot it with cameras from over a decade ago.
But in his defense and in his own words, way too many amazing people gave so much of themselves to make that film magic. I will see it completed if it is literally the last thing I do.
It's just going to look really bad because you can't have been shooting at a high enough resolution that any modern animated backgrounds are going to match up without, like, ugh.
Well, the police have stated that, you know, it's evident that he fashioned his murder after his first short film. So they're not willing to give any of that back to him. And he's not eligible for parole, you know,
okay,
25 years after 2007.
So. Also, the other thing is he, like, how easy is it for an inmate to start contacting editors?
Well, he says that he's going to get out of prison and he's going to finish his films and he's going to become a genius and everybody's going to, you know, love him.
Clearly, he's keeping the delusions up in his mind.
Yeah.
I mean, think whatever you need to keep you going, but...
You're probably not getting out of prison.
Yeah.
So, my sources for this story were Last Podcast on the Left, which did an amazing two-parter.
That's why I've been playing a little dumb during this episode. I listened to their thing.
I mean, it's a wonderful podcast. I highly recommend it. CBS News. There was a lot of mainstream media coverage on this, although it basically went down to some very basic facts. So I had to go to Murderpedia and Morbidology.com. On YouTube, you can see his interrogation video. You can see his teaser trailer for the Day Players film. And you can see there's this one video where the officer, like, brings him to the garage and, like, points at all the windows and is like, there's neighbors here. They can see what happened. It's kind of funny. And then I also saw the Globe and Mail for, like, the later stuff after his arrest. And, yeah, that's Mark Twitchell, the Dexter killer.
Thanks, I hate it.
Yeah.
Way to give filmmakers a bad name.
Yeah, even to give Dexter a bad name.
Like, especially as a horror filmmaker, like, I do want people to be able to trust me when I say, don't worry, this is just a set, I'm making a movie.
Yeah. You know, most of our horror filmmakers, like Friends, they're so nice and so professional. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, effort that gets put into making the gore look real, and there's a lot of just heart.
Effort in making it safe as well. Yeah.
Tons of that. Like, it's such a great industry, and I hate to see it defiled.
Well,
thankfully, there's other filmmakers like us, Bad Cookie Pictures.
Yeah. Which, speaking of that, do we have any housekeeping things to talk about before we head our separate ways?
Well, I just want to say a big thank you to Bren.
Yes, Bren, our patron, who on Patreon who has recently upped their pledge.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a really big help. We're really looking forward to taking it forward and making more content for you guys.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, Bren, there should be something coming in the mail for you soon for your package.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got it all packed and ready to mail off. So, because we can't do things in person right now. But if you, listeners, want to become a cookie, you can head on over to patreon.com/badcookiepictures. You'll get access to our Discord. We might be putting a poll or two up soon. We're going to try in the new year to make a bit more additional content for the patrons.
We're going to try some new things. COVID has really allowed like a lot of creativity.
Yeah, like a lot of things have slowed down.
Yep.
But it's a lot of time to figure things out. As anyone listening probably noticed, there was a pretty big gap between this episode and the last one.
Yeah, and I apologize. I know that it has been a hell of a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Once in a century kind of stuff here.
It's been an absolute whirlwind for me, and I'm sure it's been a huge whirlwind for you too, Ariel.
Yeah, it's like incredibly stressful, but at the same time, you feel like nothing's going on, and the days all blend together, and you can't tell what day it is.
Yeah, my brain is just like, I don't know what's going on. Where are you now? What have you been doing? What is all this time? Why?
Yep.
Where is
but
everybody?
We will have some good news to shout out in like either a few days or a week, depending on when this episode comes out. And so if you want to find out what that good news is, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. The good news won't be on Pinterest, so, you know, don't worry about that.
But if you feel so inclined, you can follow us on Pinterest.
Yeah, and for all those things, just search Bad Cookie Pictures and you will find us.
Excellent.
Yeah. And we also have at least one or two things planned to try and make this distant holiday season a little special.
A little special.
Because, you know, it's going to be a bit different this year.
But if you feel like grabbing some gifts for your friends that are bad cookie themed,
we do have a couple things that you can purchase. We don't currently have a shop set up. We'll see about getting something ready so you can just shop more easily. But for now, email us badcookiepictures@gmail.com. We've got bad cookie ornaments. We've got buttons. We've got posters. We've got DVDs. We even have an award-nominated poster for our film Clout, which you can purchase.
It's a great poster.
Yeah. Oh, and we also have tote bags.
Yeah. So just, yeah, send us an email
catches your fancy.
Yeah.
If any of that merch, if you're interested in it, throw us an email. We can quote you the prices, etc., and figure out shipping and stuff. We also have a small selection of bad cookie face masks as well. And both the face masks and the tote bags are handcrafted by me from materials that were like recycled, so they are sustainable and handcrafted
and just beautiful. They're beautiful masks and tote bags.
Oh, thank you. So until we're all up in your ears again, whenever that may be, might hopefully be a little sooner than you're thinking it's gonna be.
Some fingers crossed for the vaccine on the horizon.
Yes, so that we can record this in the same room.
Yeah, I miss you.
That would be nice. we can be sitting on a couch and drinking our drinks, not having to record at noon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just in the meantime, stay positive.
But test negative.
And be
above all,
stay creepy. We are bad at this, but we'll use that.
I like that one. I think we should keep that one.